How you are in the world matters. Overwhelm is inevitable and optional. Time to listen up and make it optional for you.
So on this week's episode of the Overwhelm is Optional podcast, I'm really, really excited to have Neville Wright with me. Neville has an incredible story to share. If you haven't yet read his book, go and get it. The answer is yes. Now, what's the question? A brilliant title that just turns everything around. Now, Neville went from 37 pence to over 100 million by doing lots of things. But the thing I'm really interested for the listeners of this podcast is Neville reframes everything in quite an extraordinary way. And that has really helped him. And that's what really stood out for me about your story when I heard you talk. And that's why I've invited you here. So welcome, Neville. Tell me about, I'd really like to know about when you felt most stuck in your life, but you managed to use your brilliant reframes to get unstuck and just keep going, keep going. How did you do that? Tell us, pick a story.
Right. How I was, anyway, hello, and thank you very much for inviting me onto your podcast. And Marilyn's just brought me a coffee, which I'm desperate for. Thank you very much, Marilyn. And gives me a chance to understand the question. You want to know one time when my life changed?
Have so many stories, and it's clear that you want to share those stories because there's so much wisdom there. And you and Marilyn have worked through a real roller coaster of a life to be outrageously successful. And what was clear to me is one of your strengths is you turn things around, like your title of your book.
Got it. Yes. Yeah. So there's lots and lots of turning points. And I do think everybody has these in their life. Some people recognise them, thank you very much, and some people don't, and keep going along. And I think they're opportunities, and very often opportunities in disguise. One of those turning points and opportunities was in 1978, when we had a shop for a year, and Marilyn had spent probably 50 or 60 hours in that shop every week, and I'd spent the Saturdays in there, and then we used to go to the cash and carries in the evenings, and at weekends we used to go to London to the East End buy-in, and we did so much work. We was running around soaking all it's just absolutely brilliant. It felt brilliant, and it was all new to us. And then when we went to see the accountant at the end of the year, they said, well, you have not earned anything. And so we'd done all the work for nothing, not even took a wage out of it, and we'd got £1,500 worth of extra stock on the shelves, which wasn't enough to push the business forward because we hadn't got the money. So we sold that shop, and I was going to sign for it on the Friday afternoon. And a rep came in, his name was Carl Davis, it's all in the book, and I said, well, we won't see you again, Carl. And he said, why? I said, well, because we've sold the shop, because it's no good. We're not making any money, we're in the wrong position. And with that, he got up, was eating fish and chips in the back of the shop, and he got up, he put his fish and chips down, and he got me by the scruff of the neck. He was about 30 stone, this guy was. I'd known him for a year, and he was very loud and articulate voice, he was. And he grabbed me, and I was 9 stone soaking wet, and he pulled me out of the shop, and he said, you say you're in the wrong position. This is the main street coming in and out of town. And he swung me round like a rag doll. And he was so enthusiastic. He says, I've seen you and Marilyn work so hard for a year. And he says, and now you're going to give it all up because you think you're in the wrong position. And yet all these cars are passing and no one takes any notice of you because you're not presenting your business properly. And within about 5 minutes of going on. And that's there's two things here. One, we kept the shop because Carl had convinced me in that few minutes that it was the right thing to do. And two, he was so passionate about my business and Marilyn's business, the passion there. And it wasn't anything to do with him. You know, he just could, he was just passionate. And he showed me to carry on. That was one thing. And he showed me what passion was. I never knew what passion was for business until that day. And I've been in business 4 years. And I've never seen such passion. And it's like that changed my mind completely. I mean, somebody the other day I saw on Facebook says, if you need motivating, you shouldn't be in business. Well, God, I've been in business for 4 years. And that guy motivated me because he changed my mind. He changed my world. He changed everything because he stepped me up to the next level. I didn't know there was levels, but he put me right up and then I could be passionate. I didn't know what passion was before. And I went into the shop and I said to Marilyn, we're not selling. Now, her being a Taurian, she would have said to me, if she didn't want to, she would have said, oh, no, I'm selling it and that's it. But she didn't. She didn't want to sell the shop. But at the same time, I told her about what Carl had said and that we was going to give it another go. But who was I to say that tomorrow would be any better than yesterday and we would still be working like mad for no money? Because by the time I'd been to the East End, picked up a van load of stock and brought it back and sold it, there wasn't enough stock there, wasn't enough profit to pay for the petrol to go down, let alone the time.
So that's a really good example, because what you guys were doing is working really hard. You're busy, busy, busy. And that busy, busy, busy can be exciting, but you don't realise actually you're overwhelmed because all you're doing is getting through. You're not looking. You can only see that, you know, keep. And I think when we get stuck in that just getting through and we think we're doing the right thing, we're committed, we're working hard. I had a message from somebody today going, are you busy? I said, I'm not looking to be busy, because busy misses the point for me. So I love what happened there. So Carl you said he kind of changed your view, didn't he? He made you see the next level. He took you, I love the way he actually physically did, because he pulled you outside and went, you're on a main street, for goodness sake. So what changed then? Because you said you tapped into the idea of passion, and that's really interesting, because people think when they're really committed to their business, all they've got to do is work hard. But that wasn't working, was it?
Well, I focused. I focused on what I was doing. I didn't just go through the motions. I focused on everything. We spoke yesterday about the Kaizen method, one small step at a time, and being in an area and don't, you know, feel. One of the things I read years and years and years ago was feel the balls of your feet. And I couldn't get that. You know, I had to read it 20 times. What does it mean, feel the balls of your feet? Stand still. Stand still. You know, you don't go running here and there like a bloodhound, you know, following its nose. Stand still. And
I've got to stop you right there, because
one of the things I'm known for is getting people out of their head into their body to create exactly that. And what I always do is, so I invite people to close their eyes and take their attention down to their feet. And I always start with, feel your feet on the ground. And I have this 1 minute mark, it's called, and people are using it because they can pause for 1 minute, feel their feet on the ground, and it completely changes their perspective in 1 minute. So I love what you've said, that because it completely connects with how I work, what I teach on this podcast. And that's really interesting. So feeling not your whole feet, though, you've just got the balls of your feet. So that's really interesting.
It may have been a saying to get you attracted to what was on the page. I don't know. It was who knows. But I looked at it. It stopped me in the tracks, and I go, well, I don't know what they're talking about. Feel the balls of your feet. you know, and I, yeah, and it was, that was it. And that actually, going on to another little story, just proves what it is. So the alarms went off in the latest shop that we've got, and it was a, oh crikey, 160,000 square foot. You know, there was a lot of people at the time. There was about 80 people working in there, and the alarms went off, and this was for the fire alarm. So in the warehouse, it was 12 meters tall, the racking was, and two racks deep. So you had to be a very skilled person to be on a fork truck with a little camera to go 12 meters high and two racks deep. And you could soon drop stuff, you know, and it could soon be a catastrophe. So anyway, this new driver came, and he was told not to go in a certain place where there's lots of signs. So he did, as you do. And he knocked a 6-inch pipe and he broke it, broke the seal. And that was, and then water was coming out of that. And the fire alarms went off, and it was a flood. And there were, and I ran into the warehouse, and there was already about 30 people in there. With the doors open, sweeping all this water out and trying to get it into buckets, and it was chaos. And I stood there for a second to assess the situation of all these people, like going around like flies, panicking. And I've got my security manager with me, and I said, Barry, what's situation here? Why is it coming out so fast? He said, well, when you have a break, the pumps come on. We got some massive diesel pumps, and they came on, and I go, right, okay, turn the pumps off, override the pumps, turn them off, open the valves, and let the water go out of the building. It's all right saying that, but when you've got, I think it was about 60,000 square foot in that area, 12 meters high, there's a lot of water, thousands and thousands of gallons of water, and it's still coming out. And now it was gravity coming out. I took my fleece off, dragged a desk across, and stuffed my fleece in the hole. And it stopped the water.
No way.
Yeah, because the pumps wasn't on, and all it was the pressure. And I could ram this fleece into this hole.
You saved a warehouse full of stock,
yeah.
Standing still.
And I'm standing on this desk.
And there's all these people around me, and somebody goes, now you know why he's the boss.
Well, that's true, right? Because that is such a perfect example of what happens when you get overwhelmed, you get stuck in survival mode, your mind switches to, quick, do anything, emergency, and it's not always the best thing. It took you to do the opposite. Now, what's really interesting to me about that, particularly for you, is apparently you have ADHD. So why were you the calm one in that situation?
I like to think it's logic. I'm a very logical person, and it's... Having ADHD, you go from one to another, you know, things that just attract you. And this is why I said we'll film this, because if I wasn't, see, I've just had my coffee, I've just got my water, I'm just trying to tidy up things around here. And it's like, but if we wasn't seeing each other, I'd be doing emails and I'd be writing stuff down and messing about and walking all over the place into the kitchen or wherever. And so I'm focused now, and I can focus, but not for a long time. I mean, that was only focusing for a few seconds before making that decision. And I'm always being told by Marilyn, will you stop and let me finish what I was saying? And I've gone, no, I've got the answer, because she comes out, what are we going to do about this? And starts with the problem. I've got the answer. That's it. Don't say anything. Let me finish, she says. Let me finish. I go, no, you don't need to finish. you know, we're going to do this. We'll make a decision. So it's that kind of ADHD that is really, really good for me, but it aggravates a lot of other people. So I could do that. You know, I could just stand there for a few seconds and assess the problem and get the answer for it.
So I love your story about the warehouse, partly because it's hilarious that you just stood on a desk and shoved your fleece in to stop the water. But it also shows how important it is to just pause and take an overview, change your view, not get caught up in the busyness, the overwhelming, reactionary kind of state, and just to stop, feel your feet on the ground and think, and then do the simplest thing. And it is about keeping it simple, isn't it? It is about getting out of your own way. So people could look at you and say, well, it's all right for him. He's built this huge business. You know, it was obviously he was very lucky, or it was this or it's this. But your book clearly shows that it was a series of decisions where you learnt a lot and you kept reframing it. So what would you say to, there's a lot of people at the moment who are entrepreneurs, but they're struggling because the world's a little bit weird at the moment, and they might have been struggling already, but there's even more to think about, to get overwhelmed by. There's a lot of people stuck. So you're really successful. What would be a really simple way for them to get out of their own way and just get a bit of momentum, get the passion back?
Well, yeah, you said there's so many people who are waiting. They're waiting for the sun to shine. Well, the sun's shining today. They're waiting for the snow to go away. They're waiting for their certificate to come through. If they've done exams, they're waiting for the exams to come through. And they're waiting and shall we say procrastinating. And I think I say in my book quite a bit that you've just got to get off your backside and do something, do anything that you're capable of doing, and then do the next thing and the next and the next. And some people, a lot of people don't agree with that. They're waiting because they are skilled, and they're waiting for the right job, the right opportunity, and the opportunity and the right job is out there if that's what they're looking for. But it's like, it always reminds me of if you want to go to Scotland and you're in London, and you're taxiing down the runway, you're probably heading for France. Because that's the way the plane is going. The plane is going into the wind, and it's, you want to go that way, but the plane is going that way. So it's like sometimes in life you have to go a different way, not because you want to, it's because you have to. You can't wait until all the lights are on green before you go to town, because you'll never get there. So therefore, you've got to go a different way, and you've got to do whatever you can do, and now, because so many people procrastinate, so many people. Look at the, I went on a diet. That was one of my New Year's resolutions. I went on a diet the 1st of January. Well, it was Christmas, before Christmas. So I thought by the end of January, I'll have lost 8 pounds. And by the end of January, In the 30 odd days, all I'd lost is 30 odd days. So this is what happens, you know, because I wasn't focused. I wasn't, it wasn't a priority for me. It was just one of those things I put down as I would like. So I would like to lose 8 pounds in January, and all I lost is the 31 days in January, because I didn't focus and I didn't get off my backside to do as much as I should.
You didn't actually go on a diet. You just kind of, you had the wishful thinking, but you didn't actually do it.
I thought if I went on a liquid diet, it'd be better than food.
I can't believe you were even thinking about it just before Christmas. Like, Christmas is fun because of the eating.
I know, but, you know, I go on, I normally go on an exercise and diet when I go on holiday, and everybody who comes on holiday with me go, what are you doing? Why are you eating lettuce? And I'm going, because I can concentrate on it.
No, because I got that.
I'm relaxed. I'm not overwhelmed by everything else that's going on. That's a good, you know, when you put that into overwhelm, you've got so much to do. You're in the office, you're working, you go on the sites, whatever you're doing, you've got so much to do.
Yeah.
You grab that sandwich. Or if you go into the site and you know there's four or five guys there, you're going to call in and get four or five coffees and some sandwiches. Are you going to leave yourself out? Or the burger van comes round for the bacon butties and the sausage butties or whatever. Are you going to stand there and not to eat with them?
So actually the holiday gives you the space to really focus.
Exactly, it does. Yeah. And I need a holiday.
Oh God, we all need a holiday.
Yeah, so I need a holiday to focus on on health.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I love that bit of advice, because that I really like advice that empowers people to start where they are rather than thinking they need to learn more and more and more and keep absorbing information, or they need to be better, or they need to be more confident, or they need to be more. I really like advice that says, look, you've got a ton more knowledge. You're more capable than you realize. Start where you are and just take action. Even if it's not perfect, even if it seems it's in the wrong direction, just do what you can with what you've got is what you've said, what you said. And I absolutely love that, because that's possible for everybody.
It is that there is so many people. A friend of mine, his son went to school and did very, very well, went on to college and did very well, went to university and did very well. And then I do think if you stay around too long, you get to be part of the fabric and you don't want to open the door to go out into the world. So they took another course and another course, and then they kicked him out when he was about 32, because he should have got a job there, really. And then he couldn't get a job because he was like a scientist and he was too overqualified for everything that there was about. So he ended up in a menial job. Luckily, he liked it, but he could have done that like 20 years earlier, or, well, not 15 years earlier. Because in that time, you could buy a house or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, it's a lot of people procrastinate. That's what I'm saying. They procrastinate. And on education, if you're not focused and if you're just taking courses for the sake of taking courses and you're not interested or you're not focused on it, then you might as well go out and get some practical experience, and then go back to learning. And and I've used my car for 30 odd years. I use that as a classroom. So by listening to tapes and CDs and, you know, books and stuff like that, well, now you can get books, but you couldn't in those days. So you can still educate yourself when you're working. And people think you've got to be in full-time education. Well, you've not, because you're wasting so much time unless you are focused and you know exactly what you do. I know other people who have gone into university and they've known exactly why they're there and what they're doing, and they've come out and they've done brilliantly well, because they know what they're up to. They do.
Yeah, but that's I think that's quite rare, isn't it? That kind of knowing.
It is.
Having a vocation when you're really young, like if you want to be a doctor and you just work really hard and then you get there and you love it. I think that's quite rare, because there's so many opportunities and we change so much and we get excited about different things. So I think for the majority of people, it it makes more sense to have a bit of practical, like I made my boys do some kind of more menial work as well as going to university, because I wanted them to have what you're saying, that balanced, you know, actually doing stuff and having experience as well as going off and studying. Because I don't know, that's what I always did, and I just think it's grounding. I think you're right, you can get stuck in learning or waiting for that certificate. I think that's a really interesting one that we all think we can easily get into. Yeah, I shouldn't be doing this because I haven't got that yet.
They won't take certain jobs because it's too menial yet. Yeah, actually, it's teaching them an awful lot that they don't realise. And for every hour somebody sits on their backside earning nothing, well, you know, it's an hour of their life gone. And
they want to be learning.
Yeah, they're not learning, not earning.
Yeah, so, I'm going to ask you, what's the worst job you've ever done? Because I know the worst job I ever did was for the National Coal Board in 1987, £1.62 an hour, sat in a cupboard filing miners' redundancy notices, which came off those old computer printers with the holes at the side. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
There was a wall of files. And there were on the floor was stacks and stacks of this folded out computer paper. And I was supposed to take the holes off and put these terrible miners' redundancy notices. That was worse than some more menial jobs I'd ever done. £1.62 an hour. But I'd rather have done that than sign on, because I don't know, I just have always taken any job. So what's the worst job that you've done?
I've had lots and lots of jobs where I wasn't in control of what I was doing, and that's the worst thing I think I could ever have, not being competent and in control of what the task was. So this is where training comes in, and this taught me an awful lot about don't expect people to be interested or to be able to do things if they're not trained, you know, to do it. And so this is why we have a
training program. Because you've done the jobs where you didn't feel in control. And that's what you're saying, isn't it? It's better to just do something than nothing, because you don't know when you're going to learn the skills. So for me, being sat in that cupboard filing miners' redundancy notices taught me that it was worth me pushing myself more to do something more interesting. Otherwise, you get stuck in those kind of jobs. And I think you're right that you never know the lesson you're learning at the time by just taking action.
You don't. And if you do a job really well, if you get it, if you make yourself enthusiastic, because that's the only job you've got and you're not you can't get another one, then do it better than anybody else, because somebody's going to come along and employ you for another job. I say to people, if you haven't got a job, go and work in McDonald's or somewhere, because it's one of the best places you can go, because it's got thousands and thousands of jobs. It has all different types of jobs. And you can either go up the ladder, or if you're really, really enthusiastic about serving the customers and getting it right, then every single customer who comes to you is giving you an interview. And one day somebody will come who's got a job for you. And if you're a miserable, then they're not going to give you a job. But if you're the best server on the line there, they're going to pick you out and they're going to give you a better job.
I love that. That's a really good reframe, isn't it? Although I've actually heard McDonald's is one of the best companies to work for because they're so on the training and advancement. But I love the idea that even if you're in a job that you don't really want, that you don't, you know, you wish life had turned out differently, if you do it really, really well, There's nothing like doing something well and smiling and surprising somebody, is there?
No, no. And if you know what you want, and because you've seen it, seen somebody else do it, and they've inspired you, then you can do it. It's just in the mindset it is. But so people want to be instant millionaires, and unless you win the lottery, you know, you're not going to be an instant millionaire. That's the only way to do it, I believe, to win the lottery. And boy, didn't I want to win the lottery when I was young, you know. So once you've got that out of your mindset that you're not going to, you've got to start working yourself, you know. You yeah. can't have people give you. And then what would you do if you got £1 million?
Yeah. I was going to say, what would you do? Yeah, what would you do with it?
Yeah. The money would go to somebody else who would look after it. And that's what money does. It gravitates to somebody who's working it and looking after it, because money is like the same as people. People gravitate to somewhere that they're going to be looked after, mm. and they're going to be made use of. They are. Their talents are.
I love that. So I did read in your book or somewhere that you think there should be, was it 1 million more self-employed people or something?
I do.
I'm really interested in that. I agree, but I want to know why you wrote that, and I'd like to know a bit more about that.
Well, just ring any big utility company and try and get through to somebody and try and get anything done. You know, it's virtually impossible, whether it's a telephone company or a gas electric company, whatever it is, you know, and try. People are looking for something, for solutions to their problems. The bigger the companies get, the worse the solutions get, because then you're talking to somebody like in a different country who knows nothing about what's happening in your area. So the more self-employed people, the more, I know it's dreadful at the moment for entrepreneurs who are stuck with certain situations, like the restaurants closing. You know, we've got investments in about 30 restaurants in the centre of London. Well, if you was out in the sticks, you could do your takeaways, but you can't in the centre of London because there's people are not using the offices. Thousands and thousands of people are not going to the offices. You know, if they've been relying on those, it's very, very difficult. So, but if you are a self-employed person, you can get a burger van. You can get a little. You can do something different. You have to find the customers. And then you start employing people, and then you're educating people. It's a lot different being educated by a self-employed person than it is to go into a big corporate and be educated. Completely different. Because I find that when you're in a big corporate, they'll give you a niche job to do in a chain of jobs, and everybody is doing a niche job, and you can't connect all the dots. Whereas in a small company, you can wear so many hats and understand and learn how to run a business. So, because you're doing everything, everything from the ground up, and you understand the whole process. If you get bigger and go to a big company, you can't understand the whole process. So you just do a niche job. And then if you're made redundant, where do you find another job to fit that niche?
Yes.
It's very difficult. So I think you need another million self-employed people to make the country work. But I've always thought that, you know, for the last 40 years, I've always thought you need another million people. And now you need even more, you do. And now is a great opportunity.
Go on, what's the opportunities now? So say you've got somebody who's stuck at home, they've realised that job security isn't what it was because the world's changing.
But that educates them to give other people security. Exactly. Because if they haven't got it themselves, and then they can build a business and give other people, then they've got more understanding, they've got more empathy, they Exactly. have for that person. Whereas you're just a number in a big organization, and you're there and you're out one day because somebody across. I've had a situation where somebody in America makes a decision, and I've lost my job in England. You know, it's just like that.
Yeah.
They don't know you. They don't care about you. They don't know that how your life will be impacted.
Mm.
So therefore, when you've got a small group of people, they understand a lot more. And
somebody's feeling inspired by what you're saying. There is opportunity at the moment, even though there's a lot of doom laden stuff being pushed out in the press. You're saying there's lots of opportunity at the moment. We need more people to be self-employed. What yes. would you suggest people do? Say they're listening and they're saying, yeah, okay, then what do I do though? Is it because it's too easy, I think, for people who aren't yet entrepreneurs or are struggling, overwhelmed entrepreneurs, to look at you and go, it's all right for you. So how can we turn it around and say, and get them into that feeling of, yes, there is something I can do?
Well, you find something you can do a little bit better, a little bit quicker, a little bit cheaper, a little bit or dearer, because there's a niche is where you can, you know, put your prices up so it's what value do you give to somebody? So walk down the high street today, you know, and see all the things that you don't like. And all the places you don't go into today, and why don't you go into them? What's the reason? And could you do it so you could make people happy? I've stopped going in lots and lots of places because they kind of act like they're police. They've got some authority, and they start shouting at you. In my situation, when I open the door, they shout at you, and you go, well, okay, well, fine, I've been in that shop for the last 5 years. I won't go in there again, you know, because you don't want to be shouted at because you're a little bit different to other people because there's no understanding. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, there's lots of things you could set up, and you could do it just that little bit different with a bit more empathy. So what is it today that's aggravated you? And usually things are born out of aggravation. I didn't like the way they served me. I didn't like they couldn't get the product, or they wasn't bothered about, you know, this type of thing. Or they didn't turn up when they said they was going to turn up. Or, I need my carpets cleaning. I need my chimney sweeping. I need this and that. You can start virtually with nothing. But the problem is that people very often they start to do something and they think that's it, that's the world. And I found that, I suppose with my dyslexia, ADHD, that with dyslexia, whatever you do self-employed, you need to have administrators, you know, for doing the bookwork and stuff like that. And I was very, very lucky that Marilyn wanted to be self-employed, wanted to be secure as well. And so she could do that and I could do the other. And it's like, and it's so with dyslexia, it taught me that to employ people, not to be afraid of employing people. And then with the ADHD, I was always looking, what's better? You know, what can I do that makes more money and is easier or better or gives me more pleasure?
So I love what you've done there. You're turning around difficult situations and saying, how can you do it better? And there were two things you said that I absolutely loved. One is you will now have more empathy. So that's turning things that have been difficult for you into making the world better. And you also said, what will make people happy? And the idea that we can take previous kind of pain and difficulties and turn it around and use the empathy of that situation and really focus on seeing all the opportunities in front of us to make people happy, to do things better, to redress all the things that, like you say, have irritated us. That is such an amazing way to look at the world. That is just that is just a brilliant way of looking at the world. And I absolutely love that. And I think that that is really useful to anybody who's feeling like the world is going, you know, going crazy at the moment. If it's easy to get caught up in the news headlines, people saying, no, you can't do things at the moment, or everything's difficult at the moment, or you've, like you said, you've got to wait for all your ducks to be in a row. What you've said is, no, you can step outside of all of that. You can look for opportunity to do things better, to do things differently, and to make people happy. It's just really nice. I really like that.
It you could turn on the telly now and you've got two comedies. One is called The News, the BBC or whatever it is. And the other one, you could watch the old programmes, Victor Mildrew. Right. And you, now, he's better because that's more educational. That is, Victor, he shows you all the things that is so frustrating in life. And it's like, it give you so many ideas to become self-employed.
Yeah, I love that. So that's Neville's tip for getting out of bed, turning your life around. Watch Victor Meldrew.
Just make sure you watch the right comedies, you know, because some people think, you know, turn on some of the comedies and they take notice of it too much. And that's on every hour, that is. Well, Victor Meldrew is probably not. reverse psychology.
Is that your, so what's your, if we just summed up and gave people one main takeaway for getting out of overwhelm and being able to take that action that you talk about, what would you say to them?
Well, a stopped clock is right twice a day. Do you feel in your heart that you want to be looking after yourself? You want to be responsible for yourself? And if you do, you have to hold your hand up. You have to say, I am responsible. I am responsible, and burn your bridges. And when you get on an aeroplane, well, if you can remember getting on an aeroplane, and I used to be on an aeroplane every 2 weeks at one time. And it was like, put your mask on in the event of a
emergency,
you know, in the event of the air failing, put your mask on first.
Yeah, put your own mask on first. Look after yourself. Yeah.
So many people say to me, oh, I'd love to give, you know, what do you want to do? Well, I want to earn enough money to give to loads of charities. Go, but you've got to, you know, and you're talking about the long run. So you've got to look after yourself first to be able to build that up, to get a consistency that you can do that with surplus. But you can't make it the priority for start, because you'll end up in the same situation.
So
you end up, if you don't put your own mask on first on the plane, but lack of oxygen, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to help anybody else.
Thanks for that.
All right.
And thank you so much for sharing some of your brilliant stories. There's so many more stories that you have to share in your book, and I really do recommend people get it, read it, share it, and digest it. I'm still reading it. I was tempted to do that thing where you skim read a book for a podcast, but it's not how I like to do things at all. I grabbed the opportunity to talk to you because I loved what you shared in the business group I'm in, and I'm just delighted that you said yes. So thank you so much for being with us today and sharing some of your wisdom and your humor and your generosity. It's really appreciated.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for inviting me on.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Overwhelm is Optional podcast. If you find this podcast has lifted your day, inspired you, or helped you in any way, please take some time to subscribe or share it, or preferably both, so more people can find out about my work. To connect with me, please email me at heidi@heidimark.co.uk. That's Heidi, H-E-I-D-I, at heidimark with an E, .co.uk. Or visit me on all the normal social media platforms at Heidi Mark.